community focus.
The following WEEI public service broadcast is brought to you by the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Community focus.
You're listening to Community Focus on WEEI with Darnell Williams from the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. This is Darnell Williams. I'm the president and chief executive officer of the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts. I want to welcome you again to the Community Focus program. I hope and pray that all of you had a safe and a pleasant holiday season where you're spending time with family and friends, reflecting, refreshing, getting ready for this another tumultuous year of what's going on in Washington and across the Commonwealth and in the cities. And if I would dare say, even in some of our homes, there's challenges everywhere. But I'm very grateful to be here. For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, what you should know about the Urban League, we were founded May 16, 1919. So this year in 2019, we're celebrating 100 years of our existence. So we are the current stewards. We are the current, what I call the folks who are sitting there, the stalwarts, who are really trying to do this work. And if I can summarize in a very quick way what the Urban League's really mission is, or our focus is, how can we, our board of directors, our volunteers, our staff and management, and our sponsors, our supporters, our corporations and foundations, and individual donors, if we can think about it in this way, how can we break the chains and the cycle of poverty and move individuals and their families to a more prominent place of prosperity within these continental United States of America? Now, that's a lot of words, but the bottom line mission is that how can we extend our hand to help somebody climb up the ladder of success, not looking for a pat on the back, not talking about how good we've done, but everybody has that particular right. And that's what the Urban League is all about. And so it's not a job, it's not a role. We believe it's an extension of one's ministry. So we're out there really looking at, because, you know, I love my people. But, you know, we can come to the table with some stuff. And it's our job to have them focus in on creative energy, focus in on how can you change. We don't judge you about what you did, what you're about to do. What we are going to do is put in front of you some options that are going to create a better opportunity for you. That's what the Urban League has been doing for 100 years. We hope that you will be able to come celebrate with us. Our annual meeting is coming up this month. You'll hear more about that in the next coming weeks. Let me see if I can transition. I have two fabulous guests in the studio this morning, and they are no strangers to the Boston community. We're going to talk about the 7th Annual Women's Conference. But in the studio, we have Monica Koss, who is a personal and professional pathfinder. She's an author. She has Monica Koss Enterprises. She's an author and a speaker. Joining her is Jessica Pierre. Jessica Pierre is a PR professional. She's a blogger and a social entrepreneur, as well as a public speaker. Now, one of the things that people, when they listen to the radio program, they say, Darnell, keep quiet and let the guests talk. But one of the things that you have to know on radio is not like television or in the newspaper. The only thing we don't like on radio is silence. So my job is to keep the conversation going. So if they blip, they slow down, my job is to fill in the filler. That's what I do. And I'll try not to overstep them. So good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year
happy
to
New
you.
Year.
So happy to have both of you in the studio. And so radiantly, the 19. It's the first program of the year. So if you had to just start the morning off, what would you say are some highlighted New Year resolutions that you would want to offer to the listening audience? So we're going to start with you, Jessica.
I would say to find balance between work, play, and self-care.
Okay. And Monica?
I'm not a big New Year's resolution person, but I think I would say get shifted. I would say move out of your old mindset into a new mindset and okay, make that a way of life.
So in other words, if I got a small closet, you're trying to get me to shift to a bigger closet?
If that's what you want. We all have areas where we need to move.
Okay.
So I'm saying move from those areas where you've been stuck.
Okay, so if you're being stuck, we had a program, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, talked about the giants that are in our headspace or in our spirits that are preventing us from getting to where we want to go. So you're saying it's called, what is it called?
Mental chatter.
Mental chatter. So I got some new words. Mental chatter. Mm-hmm. I got a shift. And what did you say, Jessica?
Balance.
Mm-hmm. And so all of those are the words that, and if I may, if I can just share, I would say that I want your spiritual enlightenment to be deeper. Mm. Where you have a personal relationship with our Lord and Savior.
Sure.
You don't get it from the pulpit. You're not getting it from the deacons or the trustees. You get it because you have a one-on-one relationship with God.
Yeah.
Now, you still interface with those folks, but you got to have it for yourself.
Indeed.
So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay.
A deeper personal relationship with the Maker. All right, so let's talk about where you ladies are from, kind of early influences. So let's start with you, Jessica, because I know Monica, but I'm getting to know you. So tell us a little bit about you and where do you hail from?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm a first-generation Haitian American. So my family migrated here from Haiti. My parents actually came here when my mom was pregnant with me. And I have an older sister. She was 2 years old when they moved here. And I grew up in the Boston area, but I also lived in Haiti for 3 years when I was from the age 6 to 9.
Okay, stop and, right there just for a minute. Tell people, are you from Port-au-Prince, from Tigua?
Oh, my family is from Port-au-Prince.
Okay, Port-au-Prince. Okay, so because you got some other places. I've been to Haiti, so that's why
nice,
I'm bringing that up.
Nice. I love that place.
Yeah.
So, so my family migrated here from Haiti, and then I'm first generation Haitian American. So I grew up in Haiti for a little bit, but moved back to America because I lived with my mom in Haiti, but then she passed away when I was 9. So then we came back to America to live with our dad. And I also grew up in Brockton for a little bit because I was raised by my grandmother and my aunts, and they lived in Brockton. And so I was there for about 5 years.
So you got Dorchester, Brockton, and Haiti in you. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
You have
yes.
a good village, it sounds
yes.
like.
Exactly.
I love it.
Exactly.
So tell us then if you can transport what you absorb from 6 to 9 when you're in Haiti, some early values that may have influenced who you are, and then talk about, because Boston is unique in and of itself. All right.
Right. So when I was living in Haiti, my mom, she was a really big businesswoman, and she actually was like the associate director of like one of the huge cargo shipping companies.
Okay.
So I grew up, She drove us to school, but she would always have like her power suit on and like was always ready to work and was always exploring new business ventures. So that was my early influence of seeing like a woman in a powerful
position.
Exactly.
So you had your little plaited skirt and white shirt, and white blouse.
Exactly, because I was in a private school, so yep, I had my uniform on.
I know the drill. I know the drill, man.
And my hair in barrettes.
That's right. So talk about what those influences. So you see your mom in a powerful role. So what did that say to you as a young girl?
So I always knew that I could be whatever I wanted to be. And I always knew that I could have a family and do it, and I can work really hard. And my mom, she really built herself up from the ground up. So I knew that I always had the capabilities of doing that. But my life changed drastically when I moved back to Boston, because I went back to a working class family. And so my dad, he didn't really get the chance. He was educated in Haiti and he worked as an accountant. But when he moved to America, he had to pretty much start all over again. But because he had to work so hard to like take care of himself and his family, he didn't get the chance to go back to school. So my dad works as a cab driver. So it was a huge shift for me to go from a lifestyle in Haiti where, you know, we had a house, we had, you know, went to private school, I went to dance school, I had all these things and all these opportunities, and then my world really shrunk when I got back to Boston.
So you went from being a Haitian princess to a Boston average citizen. That was a real hard fall, wasn't it?
Exactly, living in an apartment complex.
Character building.
Yeah.
But
for sure.
If you can look up, you can get up. Is that what they would say?
Exactly.
Monica, talk about some of your early influences, if you may.
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia, in Mount Airy, with my mom and my younger sister. And my mother was a teacher for many years. She retired from being a teacher. My mother, one of my things, the things that she said that I didn't recognize until probably my 30s, that she would always say, the question is not if, but how. Mm-hmm. And that led me forever, because it was never like if it can be done, but how it can be done. I went to public and private schools, went to Hampton University, Pledge Delta Sigma Theta. Started working at Prudential early when they had health care.
Here in Boston?
No, in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yep. And then I met a man on the vineyard on one of my summers, and that's how I ended up in Massachusetts. You know?
We gotta do a little exploration on that. So did you meet him down on Circuit Ave or at the Inkwell?
I met him on Circuit Ave, as a matter of fact. Yep. Our first date was actually, I think it's called the Cantina now, but the Shark Cantina or something. Yeah, but it was something else. And we ate breakfast in that little corner.
Wow. So July or August?
July at that point. In July. Yeah. 1994,
I think. Once you know the real thing and the vibes, you get invited over to somebody's house. There's about four or five parties every night.
Yep.
And they go house hopping.
Yep. That's exactly right. I was working for Prudential, and then we dated long distance for about 3 years, and then we were like, somebody should move. And I don't mind change. So I was
moved to Boston.
I moved to Boston.
From Philly to Boston.
Yep. I started working for the TJX companies and lived out in Framingham. And then
that was different.
It was very different. It was interesting because, you know, I always say, and I hope people don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, Boston folks, I don't think it's a secret that Boston folks are very connected to each other. And yes. And so while they don't, you know, it's not that they don't want you to go, that they want you to go, but they are indifferent to your presence. Right. Yeah, they don't need to add new people. Yeah. So it took a long time. I mean, there was a period of time, you know, if my then boyfriend would leave town or if he had stuff to do, I would just go back to Philadelphia.
Because it's hard to break into these social circles.
Yeah. Right? So my mother said, you know, you're never going to really be able to say you live there if you don't try to live there. Okay. And because I tend to lean towards extroversion, I just started showing up at events by myself, which was strange in and of itself to Boston folks, because usually somebody has to bring you.
Yeah.
Right?
Somebody has to be your godmother, validator.
Yeah.
Yep.
So she's down with
me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you get accepted.
Absolutely. So I would walk up to circles of people and I'd say, do you mind if I join you? And people would kind of look at each other like, who's her sponsor? Like, who brought her? Who's the crazy lady? And then to add fuel to the fire, I'm a touchy person. So
you're a Diana Ross, you know, reach out and touch.
Yeah. So if I'm, you know, and I could literally feel like the tension, and it used to tickle me because I would try not to touch so much. But I think after a while, people got used to me like, yeah, we know. That's the lady who introduces
herself. Okay, well, let me demonstrate. So demonstrate. Touch me. I'm here in the studio. And I want y'all to know I'm accepting the touch.
Yeah. And I think my mom was probably my biggest influencer early. Mm-hmm, she was, I used to say overprotective, but what does that even mean? She was protective. She kept us secure. Like, she kept us from knowing too many worldly things.
Okay, now
so I was sheltered to some degree for a really long time. And
she was the warden.
Very much so. You know, she was, my mother grew up in Alabama, and while she wasn't new to Philly at that time, she didn't grow up there. And she knew all of the things that could happen if you didn't keep a tight rein on your children, if you didn't keep them busy, if you didn't keep them. Mm-hmm. So we were always doing something, gymnastics, piano, swim, camp, sleepaway camp.
So if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Monica Koss and Jessica Pierre. And just in the few minutes that we've been talking now, we had a Philadelphia princess and we had a Haitian princess that both found their way to Boston. And I have the good pleasure of getting to walk this journey with them. So Jessica, tell us, you talked about your early influences between Haiti and Boston. Now tell us what some of those influences, Ghana, how did you get to become this speaker, or how did you end up kind of finding your voice or your sea legs?
Sure. So I was always a leader. Like in high school, I was always a leader. I went to Brighton High School. And while there weren't a lot of programs for students there, I would find my way like either to the drama club or like mock trial, just a way so I can just be involved and keep busy, like you said, because I always knew like the ultimate goal was to go to college and like get a job and like be financially secure. That's what my family always drilled into me. So I ended up going to UMass Amherst after I graduated high school. And there I got to hone in a little bit more on my leadership skills by joining student organizations. So of course, one of the first student organizations I joined was the Haitian American Student Association at UMass Amherst. And that was a pretty big organization because we threw a lot of really big events. Mm-hmm. And our presence on the campus it's been there for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. So I became an executive officer on the organization, the PR officer, and that's kind of how I got my feet wet into event planning and public speaking and like really building community. Okay. Because going to a really big school, especially a predominantly white school, we had to build community in order for us to survive and gain the skills that we needed to really thrive at the school.
Yeah, so UMass Amherst, we called it the concrete jungle back in the day. I went to AIC.
Oh, okay.
So I lived down in Springfield. So yeah. I know that you spent a lot of time in Northampton, I presume?
Yeah, of course. Okay. I worked in Northampton at Urban Outfitters.
Okay, all right. You took the bus from the college campus down to Northampton.
Exactly.
That's a very eclectic kind of area of the state. For those who don't know, it's really a lot of folks that were probably left over from the Woodstock. That are still there. Am I lying?
People still walk around barefoot there, so
wow.
It's very eclectic. If you've never gone, but charming, and I'm not making fun of it. I love Northampton.
Mm-hmm, I love it too.
It really, really is a great place. Small restaurants, intimacy, but you get a chance to know. Then you got Smith College. You have what's the other school right down
Hampshire
the street?
Hampshire College.
Now Hampshire is a whole another. That's a whole another conversation. But so. You're at UMass Amherst. There's a lot of individuality. Mm-hmm. What dorm did you live in?
I lived in the Southwest area.
Okay.
So I lived in a few different dorms there. I lived in Kent. I lived in Washington. I lived in Patterson. So
okay, all right. So no, I know each one of them buildings. So you're sitting there talking to somebody who knows. We saw some good parties up in those places.
We had a lot of fun.
So, Monica, tell us for you in terms of how you became an author. But before you became an author, how did you take from that Alabama rigidness that produced the woman that I see today? How did you find your voice and you got to TJX and Framingham and and what were some of those things that really kind of generated towards you?
My mother was one of those people to sign you up for everything. She would just tell you, no, you have practice for the Easter play tomorrow. The Easter play? I didn't sign up for the Easter. I did. So you go tomorrow. You know, you're doing the announcements on Sunday. You have usher board meeting on this day. You are now part of the choir. You know, good luck. So my mother always or often put us in situations where we had to speak in front of a lot of people.
So you're the person standing up in front of church and reciting what. Now, what did Jesus say this morning?
Yes, and right. It could be scripture. It could be the welcome. It could be the sick and shut in. That's right. All these things we had to do begrudgingly at the time.
I know.
And the interesting thing is I stumbled into where I am now because I started off, you know, in high school, I got really good at math. And so all the adults in my life, with there not being many women of color or people of color in general in finance, all led me towards finance and accounting, which is what I majored in, graduated with a degree in, and spent probably about 17 years, I think it is, in corporate America.
On the finance
in various
accounting.
Roles in finance, in audit. And then I spent a quick stint in human resources. Wasn't my cup of tea. And then I was a commercial real estate broker, as you know, before I came to do this work full time. Paralleling that, though, in my early career, you know, I was the one that people would come and ask advice from. You know, you might be that friend or you have that friend that if you need a reasonableness check, right, you're going to call this person. And so I remember it started to happen at work and it was managers and coworkers coming to ask for just random advice. I didn't get that promotion I was looking for. I'm breaking up with my boyfriend, like all kinds of advice. And I remember a dear friend of mine said, when are you going to start charging people for this advice you give? And I was like, who charges for advice? And she was like, oh, sweetie, lots of people. It's called a consultant. And that's when I started what was then a personal brand company part time.
Okay. So,
so
you
I've
did
been
that.
Paralleling that throughout my whole career until 2010 when I left commercial real estate and started this company full time, which is now called the Core Value Company.
The Core Value.
The Core Value Company.
But let me ask you this question. You mentioned you've spent 17 years within corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I think people dismiss what you're able to absorb by working in a corporation.
Absolutely.
So would you spend a few minutes with our listening audience to share with them what were some of the components that developed you that are still now serving you because you served time in corporate?
Absolutely. If I could just start off by saying when I hear people who want to run their own business say, because I don't want to deal with people or because I can't stand, I'm like, you then stop. Because that is the opposite of what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the lessons for me was really around around connecting to people that are different from me. And I literally mean different value system, different process, want different outcomes. But who are those people and how do you connect with them despite those differences? So mm-hmm, just said, mm-hmm. I don't like that person. They don't function like me. How do you still get them to be an ally or somebody who is at least not going to trash your name, mm-hmm, right? That's mm-hmm. because even your manager in corporate America is not the only one who makes a decision about whether you're going to get promoted. They're going to ask 10 other people, what do you think? And so when they're asking those people what they think of you, what are they saying? You know, you need to know that. And right. sometimes that means getting with the person who you know in
that
the beginning doesn't,
with?
Or doesn't like you. You know, I've had lunches and coffees with lots of people who I believe have problems with me. And I just would come say, hey, you know, I think we got off on the wrong foot or I think something that I do is annoying to you. So I let go of the ego. Mm-hmm. Right. I didn't give what they gave.
That's a very valuable lesson.
Right. I dug in and said, how can this relationship be different? Because I'd like it to be,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
when I come to work every day, I prefer a pleasant. We don't have to be best friends, but I'd like to know where the rub is
okay.
for us.
So Jessica, talk about what it has that been like for you, because I'm sure, as they would say in Southern Indian, it ain't been no spiraling staircase.
No, not at all. Ever since I was younger, I always knew I wanted to help people. So I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I just knew I wanted to help people in some type of way. And like you, I was always that person that people would always talk to and come to. Like even older people would always come to me and just vent or just debrief with me because I was always a good listener. So I had a great awareness of like the problems that the people around me were facing. So after I graduated from UMass Amherst, so I majored in political science because that I always believed in like the political system to create change and civic engagement. So now I work, I do PR in the political realm, not necessarily for candidates, but more for like advocacy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right now focusing on economic policy at the Institute for Policy Studies. But as I graduated college and I was kind of figuring out what my purpose was and what my footing was, and I was happy with my job, but I knew there was something bigger out there for me. And this is kind of how I actually started my organization, The Queen's Company. And that okay. was my way of figuring out what I needed to navigate the professional world after graduation. And then along with my group of friends, what we needed as women of color and in predominantly white working spaces and the lack of mentorship and the lack of guidance because we were all first generation college graduates. So we were kind of just navigating the world ourselves. And we were like, there's a lot of other women who have the same problem. They're trying to figure out what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to do it. They're trying to build relationships to help them. So that's how we started our organization, Queen's Company.
When you say we, who? We the people? Who?
So myself and five other co-founders.
Okay.
Yes.
Talk to me.
Yes.
So anyway, so you got four other counterparts that is
five.
Called the five total.
No, six of us total.
Okay. Okay, so we need to talk to this person because she has the math. I'm just responding to what you said. Okay, so there's six of you.
Yes.
That have started this company called The Queen's Company.
Yes.
And you're based of where?
We're based out of Boston. And at first, we started off by just throwing events to bring women of color together. So
networking?
Yes. Our first event was called the Queen's Dinner. And we're actually coming up on our three-year anniversary this month.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Awesome. So it started off at Maggiano's. I saw a meme floating around Facebook of... it had like a group of black women and they were like, it was like a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse, an engineer. And they were like, yeah, you know, like we're taking over. We're successful. We had a great year. And then I seen people sharing the meme on my Facebook feed and they were like, oh, I wish I had a group of girlfriends like this. It's so hard to find women to support you. Like women are so catty. And I looked at it and I was like, I mean, good group of girlfriends. We're not like engineers or anything, but we're pretty supportive and we have a lot of fun and we there's good energy.
Sure.
So I was commenting and I'm like, it's not that hard. But then it made me really think about my group of girlfriends. And I was like, well, you know, we do all this fun stuff together, but how can we really like focus our friendship and be more intentional about how we're really helping each other figure out like our goals and really That's pursue awesome. Our passions.
Wow. That is so amazing. If you're just tuning in, Jessica Pierre was just speaking and Monica Koss are here in the studio here at the Community Focus Program. I run into a lot of women, single women who are saying, in spite of all of the positive things, they always have, do you know any good men that you can introduce me to? So now how do y'all deal with that in these women groups? Since y'all got all of these powerful words, I want to help me find a man, Darnell.
That's such a loaded question and statement.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably spend the hour on that, but I won't.
Okay, well, just give me the cliff verse.
All of that, it starts inside.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's interesting because you can watch, you can go to an event where somebody will say, I don't know why you're going to that event. The ratio is 7 to 1, right? 7 women to one man.
Okay.
But you can watch certain women walk in a room and it'll be like there's a 1 to 1 ratio.
Okay, I got you.
Because of how they walk in and the energy that they are exuding, nothing about them feels incomplete. Mm. So that men, I think, are attracted
to it. Where independence?
Yeah, men who are really looking for something, right? Because I would never categorize, I hope I would never, all men, all women. I don't believe that.
No, I agree.
But depending on, you know, there are men who look for women who are depleted. Because they like to be the savior and they like to be controlling.
That's
right?
Interesting.
It's true.
No. Listen, my job is to listen, but as a man, I'm saying, where did that come
from? Yeah, and that's their own
That's
issues,
why you say it's loaded.
Right, yeah. There's categories of answers. And that's about the man's insides, right? Why he looks for that and what makes him attached to that is about the work he hasn't done. What makes her need him to come and fill her holes is work that she has to do. So everybody's meeting the void.
So in other words, if you're saying if I come to the table of equals, it will be a whole different kind of interface
Completely.
And interaction as opposed to saying I need somebody to compliment to make my life whole.
Yes.
So now I get it where you're saying that's a loaded question. But so then why do women approach men and tell them I help me find somebody then?
I don't think women know how to do the work.
Okay.
That's where the show comes in. The whole next hour is when you tell people you have to do this and you have to do that and you should be this, you should be secure, how do you do that? It's easy to just throw that out there as a, you know, you have to be confident. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
What are the areas of my life I have to look at? How do I become whole? And then how do I know what I really want? Like, because if you're searching for a relationship for function, that's not going to last.
Right.
If you're searching, you know, there's a guy and let's say he adores you. You need it. You need adoration.
Yeah.
So you meet this guy and he adores you. He rubs your feet. He comes home at night. He brings you flowers, like all the adoration things. If for some reason he has a part of life where he is emotionally unable because he's struggling on his own, he still loves you. You still have the same relationship, but he can't do all the things he did. And now you start to disconnect because the function is gone.
Right.
Relationships based on function don't last. They have to be based on value so that no matter what the operating things are of the relationship, you genuinely are connected to that person on a deeper level.
If you're just tuned in, you're listening to Monica Koss and Jessica Pierre. This is the Community Focus program, and we're going to continue this conversation. It's just been a great, so far, it's been absolutely marvelous to hear from these women in terms of their journey. This is the Community Focus program with Darnell Williams on Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI.
Community Focus.
Thanks for listening to Community Focus on WEEI with Darnell Williams.
Community Focus.
This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI and WEEI.com, Boston.
Community Focus.
The following WEEI public service broadcast is brought to you by the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Community Focus.
You're listening to Community Focus on WEEI with Darnell Williams from the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. This is Darnell Williams. I'm the president and chief executive officer of the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts. You're listening to Monica Koss and Jessica Pierre. This is the Community Focus program. So far, it's been absolutely marvelous to hear from these women in terms of their journey. We have been talking about a range of items, and I really thank you and Monica for giving me that education and our listening audience about the completeness of a conversation. But talk about,
The Queen's Company.
The Queen's Company. So tell us, you started out doing events. Coming up on your third anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So share with the listening audience, one, how can they reach out to you via social media to Queen's Company, and then talk about your goals for this third anniversary.
Sure. So in addition to the events that we've thrown in, it started off pretty slow because we didn't really have like a strong network yet. But what really helped us build our network, now all of our events are sold out, and we have like,
that's
our email
great.
List has like about 1,000 people. We have like over 1,000 followers on Instagram. But consistency is what really helped us, and authenticity.
Consistency of what?
Consistency of putting out valuable content to women, consistency
okay.
of throwing very valuable events, and then our authenticity, because people know that we are like a solid, we're like a legit solid group of girlfriends, and like our business model is essentially based off of our friendship model, which a lot of people say is risky, or like, you know, don't do business with friends. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we've had our set of challenges.
Or family.
But we all have a shared commitment to really helping mm-hmm. women grow and develop. And that really shows through our individual lifestyles as well. So
people, substantively, is what
exactly,
you're saying.
Exactly. People trust us because they know what we're about this life. Like,
so you have a currency and you have a value that when people see Queen's business or Queen's...
Queen's Company.
Queen's Company. I'm working on, I'm slow, but I'm quick. So the Queen's Company, so when they hear that, they know that there's going to be something of value to them.
Yes.
Is it just women that come to your event?
Just women of color. And like, we've had some men that gave us some pushback. So last year, we had our first event open to men as well. We launched our website, which is queensco.org, last January. So we had like a website launch party, and we invited men to come to the space and support. And we're very careful about the types of people that we bring into the room, because we want to make sure that it's a safe space and it's welcoming and our women feel comfortable expressing themselves and being their whole selves.
Okay, okay.
But when it comes to certain social events that we'll host, like, for example, last month we had a holiday happy hour and toy drive benefiting Project Hope.
Okay,
and we
gotcha.
Had it at Fort Hill Bar and Grill in Roxbury, and mm-hmm. we invited men to come. So they got to come and, like, mix and mingle and just, like, support the cause and just just generally support the women who were there as well.
Okay, great, great.
But that's awesome. Like, a dating. We always, like, emphasize, like, you know, you can come and, like, add to the vibe, but make sure you're not, like, harassing.
You're not harassing. Yeah.
That's
you
stay in your mailing list.
So stay in your lane.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
I love it. I absolutely
but
love
we
it.
Recently launched our membership service. So now our business model has changed a little bit so that we have members who are part of our organization. And we have a membership program where we offer accountability partners. And
what does that mean?
Huge.
So you know, there's a lot of emphasis on setting goals and like being productive, but life gets in the way, challenges get in the way. You know, you think that you're going to be on a set path for the year, but then a whole bunch of obstacles come in and like, you get sidetracked. Yeah. And you get distracted, which is normal, but you need that extra push and that extra support. So not only somebody to just validate your ideas, but somebody to check up on you and make sure that you're actually getting it done.
Yeah, because do you have, and this would be for you, Monica, in terms of when you said people would come to you, there was a natural gravitation for you. And then somebody suggested you to start charging people for the consulting advice that you were providing. But how do you give somebody feedback that don't realize that they're depressed or they are have giants in their thinking and their whole demeanor is keeping them from reaching their goals? How do you break that barrier for them?
Yep.
Because you've got a voice of experience here.
Mostly what I realized is that I was giving less advice and asking more questions.
Okay, gotcha.
So it felt like advice, but it was really targeted questions to cause them to open it up.
Okay.
And to unpack it. And when they start repeating their own answers to me, right, so they're asking and answering their own question, it comes. Because when you hear yourself answering a question, you're like, ugh.
I got it. The light bulb goes on?
That's right. Well, then the question is, okay, now that I know, I see it, what am I willing to do about it, right? Because mm-hmm. there's a sacrifice that comes with achieving whatever it is that you want to do, whether you need to stop eating chocolate cake or whether you need to stay up from, you know, you get home from work at 7 and you need to stay up till midnight every night to get your business plan together. There's a sacrifice of something to get what you want. And you have to decide how much does it cost in time and in desire, and am I willing to pay it? And then don't judge yourself for the answer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's more just a bunch of question asking, because what I know is that I don't have the whole story.
Right.
Right. So I can't give advice on half the information. I can't give advice on it because I'm not you. So I can't then transport myself into your body to think like you think to give you advice that would work for you, because there's no one size fits all. So I'm asking questions so that you can start to develop your own formula for your own life. Okay. But in that, which I talk about all the time, you got to take the label off the table, right? You got to stop labeling yourself, labeling others, and you just got to do your process. You have to identify your values to mm-hmm. figure out how you work. There's components to it.
That's not easy.
It is not easy, but guess what? Once you do it, you will never turn back.
So you're basically, both of you are saying that you are helping people, and the common denominator to both of your conversations this morning, from my assessment, is that you have great listening skills. You're listening to what people are saying to you without putting judgment or labels, but as they are unfolding what is happening to them, you see patterns that you can help them. But it's not something to say, I'm doing this because this is what I've done, but you help them do their own self-evaluation and determination. Is that a fair assessment, ladies?
Yes, exactly. Which is why I loved when you said authenticity, too. It's just like, that is the buzzword.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to be authentic,
and you have to be consistent.
You have to have a value system. Mm-hmm. So if you had to pick 1, 2, or 3 values that are critically important in 2019 for women and for all persons, because it don't have to just be a woman, because men, we need this stuff too. We just, you know, we think we're tough and strong and all of that, but at the end of the day, we're just as fragile as the next
Absolutely.
Person. Mm-hmm. So what would be those 3 values that you want to highlight for this morning's discussion?
So I have 2 that came to mind. So the first one is to stay true to yourself. Because I feel like there's a lot of noise, and I feel like it's hard. Self-chatter and even like societal chatter about who we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to act. And sometimes that causes us to lose ourselves. And I really believe that there's power in being exactly who we are. And mm-hmm. that's where our gifts lie. And so in addition to staying true to yourself, building community as well and lifting as you climb. So a lot of people can tell me, you know, Jessica, you're only 27. How are you empowering women when you've barely even lived life? But I think that there's value in like the experiences that I have. And I believe that with my experiences, I can connect with other women who may have had similar experiences or just need some type of encouragement due to some of the adversity that I've been through, and we can mm-hmm. connect in that way and really help each other out by expressing those stories and building community.
Okay. Building community, being true to self, which leads to this basis of power, internal personal power.
Mm-hmm.
Monica, what would you say?
I would say, so it's only because the word value to me is so personal that I'm going to give what I think are important steps to take in 2019.
Okay. Gotcha.
I would say identify your core values. Identify and define your core values as soon as you can so that you know your process. The second thing is to take the label off the table.
When you say that, what does that really mean? Because, you know what it means because mm-hmm. you are a practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
As they would say in our business, you're a SME.
Mm-hmm.
You're SMEs, both of you are SMEs. That means you're a subject matter expert.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So as SMEs, help people to know, because sometimes when people are listening,
mm-hmm, sure,
they don't really know, what does she mean, take the label off?
Absolutely.
Give us an example when you say take the label off so people will understand how to practically apply that
Absolutely.
Into their lives.
Have you ever referred to anybody as smart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you mean when you said it?
Well, they knew more than I did.
Okay. So people who know more than you.
Mm-hmm. Or on a particular topic.
Okay.
People who are intelligent, well-spoken. Those are some of the things I associate. Or educated.
Okay.
That's a loaded question, by the way.
Okay. Thank you. That's the point. All right. One more. When you say someone is a leader, what do you mean?
They can influence people.
Okay.
I would say people who are, as a leader, they are in a position of authority or power.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to move people to see things the way that they present.
Okay. Would you agree that we tell young people sometimes that they're leaders when they are not at all in a position of authority?
I don't know if I'd say they're leaders. They have leadership potential.
Okay. I have heard adults on many occasions say, I see a room full of leaders here, or that young lady is a leader because she, right? So we use these labels so haphazardly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the problem with labels is that they are transient, right? So let's say if I kept interrupting you as you were talking throughout this whole interview, what might you say about me?
You're self-centered. And
self-centered. This is our first interaction. If somebody asked you about me, what might you say?
I would have said you were rude.
Okay. So now I have. Okay. So now you've applied
got two labels.
Okay. So now next week I go on another radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't interrupt them at all. As a matter of fact, I'm very giving of the, mm-hmm. well, you say more about that, Jessica. And I sit and I listen. Now the other two guests on that show would label me what?
Oh, she's in command. She's in control.
She's considerate.
She's considerate.
Right? Okay.
So different set of labels.
So, but let's say if before the show you knew the guest going on, you say, oh, God, you're going to have to fight to get a word in edgewise because she's really rude.
Mm-hmm.
But then they experience me completely opposite than what you've labeled me.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is, the next time I see you, you're going to treat me like the label you've given me, correct?
Hey, as God
Probably.
Made green apples.
But the reality is, I'm not that way all the time.
Mm.
Okay.
When we label people, it sets a boundary in our mind around what that person is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we treat them that way
mm-hmm.
instead of leaving it open that we just had an experience. So the fact is I interrupted you. It doesn't make me rude. So when I say take the label off the table, in my household, my kids, I don't tell them they're smart. Because we usually tell children they're smart when what?
When they get good grades.
When they get good grades. So then what that does is it causes children not to take risks because they don't want to lose the label of smart. So
gotcha.
Then you have kids choosing things that keep them getting the labels. Then you grow up to be adults.
Okay.
And that's why people posture so much, because we are label hungry. We've become a society of label chasers. If I'm focused on what you think of me and what the label is, even the labels I want for myself,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
if I decided that I want to be smart, then everything I do, I'm looking for a label and not acting from my core values.
Mm.
That's how people get lost. And that's where regret comes from. because you're not functioning from who you are. You're functioning for the potential outcomes of these labels that you're hoping
to get. Or the adoration that comes from those labels or the
good labels.
The attention.
You want the good labels.
Right, right.
So we do things so that we can get these good labels, no matter whether the process we use to get them is true or not. So when I say take the label off the table, I mean live by your core values and let the labels fall where they may.
Wow. I mean, that is just an unbelievable mouthful for all of us in the listening audience. If you just tune in to the Community Focus program, you're listening to Jessica Pierre, and the last voice prior to mine was Monica Koss, talking about the things that are so critically important that we really don't have a time in our society to really deal with these kind of issues because we're trying to move on to the next cheddar opportunity. We're trying to move on to X, Y, and Z. But we have an important event coming up this week, the 7th Annual Women's Conference. And both of you are going to be scheduled speakers on that program. So why don't we tell or share with our listening audience, what is this speakers, brunch, networking, author signing, marketplace, and more? What does that mean from your vantage?
So last year was my first time attending a Maven's World Women's Conference. And honestly, I was a little bit skeptical because I'm used to going to conferences that are specific to my industry. So like public relations conferences, communications conferences. So when it comes to women's conferences, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how much value I'm going to get as a professional or even as an entrepreneur. But I was pleasantly surprised. As soon as I arrived there, just like being in a room full of hundreds of women is already valuable within itself. But all of the speakers and the various topics that they touch are really relevant. And there's a number of different topics, whether you're a working professional, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a stay-at-home mom. There's something for every type of woman in the room. There's a workshop for everyone. There's a speaker that's going to speak to your soul. And I found it really valuable, especially at the top of the year, first week of January, you know.
So it's always at the same time every year?
Yes.
We're all like, you know, hyped up because it's a new year and ready to crush our goals and stuff. So that really gave me the network, but also like the validation I needed that like what the vision I had for myself was possible.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question, Jessica. When you walk into a room and it's all these women of color, how does that make you feel inside?
Oh, my God. I'm like automatically like I'm in my zone. Like that's home. I recharge. I can come in feeling horrible. Like I remember last year it was freezing and the car was snowing and there was snow all over the ground and it was a lot of ice and the car I was driving. I was like on the highway and it was like, so I was like nervous. And then, you know, you also have to get dressed up, which is like a problem that some of us women face, getting dressed up in the cold weather. So, you know,
driving a Humvee, driving a Humvee
at the time. Yes. But it got me there.
That is the point.
So I was a little bit stressed. I was a little like, oh my God, am I going to make it? Like, what's going to happen? But as soon as I got there, I everything just kind of melted off.
And you felt whole.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And I just met a lot of encouraging women, a lot of hugs, a lot of great connections. And like Ayanna Pressley was like the morning speaker and she killed it. It's just really amazing seeing all the vendors and just building a lot of great connections.
Wow. Monica, why don't you tell us what your experiences have been?
So I remember when Anna was in a restaurant that held like 50 people. I don't know. I'm sorry, Anna, if it's more. But it was a small space. And I think I spoke at the second one. And similar to you, when I walked in the room, the anticipation, the hunger, right? People were had emptied their cups and were ready to be filled. So that feels amazing. The other thing that I appreciate about Anna, I've been to lots of women's conferences. I go to way fewer now because of the work that I do and how I feel like too many speakers give formulas and will tell you in order to succeed, you have to, one, be more outgoing, two, get out of your comfort zone, three, there's no formula, right? So what I appreciate about Anna's conference is the way she curates the speakers. Oftentimes we want to go to the women's conference because we see a big name, right? And but sometimes you go and you're in awe of the big name, but not necessarily the big message, mm-hmm. right? And I just really appreciate, I don't know how else to say that, the way she curates the speakers. We're talking about Anna Foster. Anna Foster, the founder.
And the founder of this. And so we want to make sure that we give Anna a shout out.
Absolutely.
And so both of you are saying that there's some power, affinity, there's some connectivity. Mm-hmm. And if we were, not to take away from the conference, but if you were to put it into context of hashtag me too, so these conferences really give you a chance to, as you said earlier, just feel safe mm-hmm. and secure. So that's what it does?
I think it's so much bigger than that. It is absolutely a safe space. But in addition to that, it's real, tangible, actionable items that mm-hmm, you can mm-hmm. walk away and apply.
So the application of it.
Yes. One of the things that I talk about a lot, too, is sustainable change. I am over momentary motivational moments.
Right.
Where you get a good hallelujah, that was good, I'm going to write that down, and you never refer to it again.
Okay.
But I like that when you leave there, when you see the speaker again, or you see a woman that went to the conference next year, that you have similar language, or that something in a workshop may have resonated with you, too, so that you could, again, actually apply it, that it wasn't just this, oh, my God, that was just so great. Well, what was great about it? Everything. The speakers were awesome. What was awesome about it? Right. There we go with labels.
Right.
What? Give me some examples of what resonated with you, because what resonates with Jessica won't necessarily resonate with me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the conference wasn't good. So that's the other thing about labels.
So it's a buffet.
Yes.
It's a buffet, and everybody has likes different portions Absolutely. Of the dishes and quantities.
Absolutely.
Of it. So I think that we, if you're just tuning in to the Community Focus program, I'd just like to remind you that we have a customer service and sales training program, an info session on January 7th, Tuesday from 1 p.m. Because if you have someone in your family who is looking for a job and looking for some training, come to our info sessions on Tuesdays and Wednesdays of every week. Our annual meeting is coming up on January 31st over at the bowling building. So we'll be able to talk about what did we accomplish and what are we going to do for this 100th anniversary. I just want to make sure you know that the Urban League is there for you, working hard for you to be lifted up. Anna Foster has put on this conference for 7 years. I'm looking at the lineup of speakers, and Crystal Haynes is a journalist, is going to be one of your keynote. She's the keynote. Mm-hmm. And so Colette Phillips is going to be in the house, along with the radio guests here, Monica Koss and Jessica Pierre. And the list goes on. And so I think that you have what I would consider one of these. And I like what you said, Jessica. It's at the first week of the year. Mm-hmm. So you got a chance to come in with your cup empty, mm-hmm. as Monica said, fill my cup up, get the things that I need, but it's going to be replicated as opposed to being an euphoric a feel-good moment. Boy, did Pastor preach this morning.
Correct.
And, oh, that was a great sermon. Well, what did he preach? I don't know what he talked about, but I know it was a good sermon. And they're not retaining. Mm. And what you're saying is the retention. And that's not a knock on the preachers, everybody. So don't be going to your church this morning and talking about, Darnell was talking about you and we not remembering your sermon. Well, if you know the scripture and you know the word, you write it down. And when you go back home, you're supposed to review that scripture and see what does the scripture say in addition to what your pastor or the speaker of the morning said. Then you'll be what they would call the Berean church. You'll be rounded and grounded. So I got my little sermon off. So, okay, I'm done. I'm done. Back to the women's conference, because it's so important that we have these minutes to talk about us. So as we get ready to kind of go into the final stretch, ladies, I want you to think prescriptively that 2019, we've had a tumultuous 2018 with children dying at the border, the shutdown. We've had riots that were race riots and white superiority. We've had anti-Semitic phrases that are being done. The 95 souls that were found in Texas last week. I don't know if you read about it. If you haven't, you should. 95 African Americans were found in a grave that they're running to build a school. But those graves were there because they were convicts. It was called convict leasing. So if you look up Texas and you look up convict leasing and you read the article, I guarantee you, I sent it out to 50 people. Mm. And I my soul has been saddened, but I was also emboldened.
Sure.
Because these are the things that are, that's the real American history. So look up convict leasing, mm-hmm. and look up Texas and the 95 souls that were buried there. And they're debating trying to move these people to another location so they can build a school there. Mm. And the local community folks. And so there's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in order to bring that out.
Sure.
And there's a lot of our history has not been told, but it just sears the conscience to say that, you know, America say, what do you want? What do we want? Justice? When do we want it? We want it now. Mm-hmm. But it's been denied in so many cases. So when I hear the affirming voice and affirming attention that women, and one of the youngest persons in that grade was 14,
wow.
and the oldest was 70.
Wow.
So there's you got to read it for yourself, mm-hmm. and if you read it, it will cause you to see things just a little bit differently, and that's the reason why the question is coming. As we look at 2019, you got a women's conference, 7th annual. You have your PATH. You have your core values, you have your leadership opportunities, but now we know that you just can't use labels. We have to make sure that, and we have to shift. Did I get it? Am I getting
yes,
it, ladies?
Yes, killing it. killing it.
Did I miss anything this morning?
Don't forget balance.
The mental and
balance.
Chatter.
You got
tame
balance.
That mental chatter.
And you get, what do you say, retain it?
Tame it. Tame it.
Because one of the things you have to also remember, when we have blind spots mm-hmm. that happen in our life, we can't remove them. Our job is to make you aware of them.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about when you talk about that shift?
No, shift, it literally is getting unstuck.
Getting unstuck.
Where are you stuck?
Okay.
Confidence, business, health, weight.
So talk to me in 2019 as we make the shift, we make the balance, as we think about the core values. We don't think about a man coming into my life or a person coming to my life making me whole. I walk into the room, I am whole. Mm-hmm. I'm a phenomenal woman. So what is it that you would say to our listening audience that will enhance those things?
I'm going back to identify those core values. I will never let that go, because when mm-hmm. you do that, then you have such a complete and whole understanding of who you are and how you operate, that second guessing goes away, that, you know, pleasing all the people all the time goes away, that worrying about how people are labeling you goes away. Mm-hmm. So you can focus on your path. And when you do that, you will find tribe members, whether it be organizations or people, will start to come to you because you're aligned. But when we're trying to go over here and be over here and get on that person's path, it gets confusing. You don't know where you are. So identify those core values. And
identify core values and get rid of the labels.
And tame the mental chatter.
And tame the mental chatter and make the shift.
And there's more on... didn't talk about my, I'm releasing a new website, the Core Value Company website, on my birthday, January 18th. And it'll have videos on mental chatter, taming the mental chatter. So I have stuff for individuals, for entrepreneurs, and for corporations.
Okay, got you.
That
so
do
it's
a
three,
lot of
that's
customized.
The three, that's a triage.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So I can go to your website once you launch it. So then I can get it as a man.
Yes. Well, you can go to the Core Value Company now. It just.com. It just leads you to my old MonicaCost.com website. So there's information on there. But
what about you, Jessica?
So an extension of what Monica just said, find your tribe, find your group of like-minded individuals, align yourselves with people who are who have similar values to you or in positions where you see yourself being there, and just really build that community, because you are who you surround yourself with. So make sure you're surrounding yourself with people that bring good energy, people who inspire you, people who hold you accountable. So that's my main thing for 2019.
The way I would take that as a host here today is say, if you want to fly with eagles, you can't be hanging out with turkeys.
That is one way to put it.
I mean, you think about it. I try to come up with phrases that can synthesize
that stick,
what you, that will stick and retain, because people mm-hmm. know what a turkey is and they know what an eagle is.
Yeah,
I'd rather be flying with the eagles, and if you're or you want to hang out with the chickens ain't gonna never fly.
Yeah, that's true.
They're gonna be afraid in order to take the risk and to dare to soar. So we're all saying the same kinds of things in terms of the psyche of our people, because it doesn't mean that you have to be a woman to absorb what it is that we're saying. If you just tune in, I started out this program by saying that we had two phenomenal women in the studio. And as a result, I believe our conversation has led to having a phenomenal discussion. And so we will make sure that we have an opportunity for you to just tune in again when we have phenomenal people here. And so as we close, so I'm going to let the last words be in this last 30 seconds. Jessica, real quick, how they can talk about your business, how they reach in touch with you.
Sure. So you can follow Queens Company on Instagram at queens.company. And we're also on Facebook under Queens Co. And you can check out our website, queensco.org. So QUEENSCO.org. And then you can find me on Instagram as well at Jessica Pierre.
And Monica.
Awesome. The Core Value Company, and I don't think I ever said what we did. We create customized experiences and trainings for corporations as well as workshops for entrepreneurs and working on the individual stuff. But most of that is on social media. But I can be found at thecorevaluecompany.com, and all my social media connects are on that website.
And with that note, this is the Community Focus Program. You go out and have a blessed day and a blessed week. Thank you for joining us.
Community Focus.
Thanks for listening to Community Focus on WEEI with Darnell Williams.
Community Focus.
This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI and WEEI.com, Boston.